Good afternoon, everybody. As always, you're listening to the ASSP Healthcare Practice Specialty Health Beat Podcast. We appreciate you joining us today. You're listening to part five of our series on best practices within different practice specialties and industries. So for those of you that have been following us, we've talked to environmental, we talked to ergonomics, we talked to industrial hygiene, and now we're going to be talking to the crew over at Public Sector Practice Specialty, which I'm actually a member of as well. Great guests, great conversation. So short of me speaking for y'all, if I could ask you each to give just a little bit of introduction about yourselves, your career experiences, all that good stuff, that'd be great. Steve, we can go ahead and start with you, please.
Okay, so Corey, pleasure to be on the call with you today, as well as with other members of our great practice specialty. So again, my name is Stephen Guillory. I am the safety program manager for the city of Houston. Been with the city of Houston approximately 15 years, starting as a safety representative, moving up to safety supervisor, safety operations manager, and now program manager. Prior to that, a lot of my safety was taught hands-on in the world of FedEx, where I was actually a courier with aspirations of being a safety person, which is pretty weird, but it got me to where I needed to go. Education-wise, I have my master's degree from East Carolina University in occupational safety, as well as a master's degree from University of Denver in environmental policy and management. My first love was environmental policy, environmental health, and then it morphed to safety. Right now, I am working to become a doctor, not a doctor of patients, of course, but my PhD from Indiana University of Pennsylvania in the safety sciences. Course has been completed, and I am finishing up my research, which I hope to defend this time next year. I would like to say I will be Dr. Stephen Guillory at the close of 2021. And that's pretty much it for me. I would love to hear about the other members on the call, though.
Awesome. Thank you. Denise, how about yourself, please?
Sure. My name is Denise Riad. I am currently the corporate safety officer for the city of Austin. Prior to being the corporate safety officer, I was actually a safety manager for the Public Works Department. I actually started in Austin in 2012. Prior to that, I actually worked for CBRE, Raytheon Technology, as well as Seagate Technology. In my career, I've had the unique experience of working as a contract worker for environmental health and safety manager for the U.S. government in Guam and the National Science Foundation in Denver, where I was got the opportunity to actually work on the Antarctic program by going back and forth to Antarctica. I earned my master's degree in industrial hygiene from the University of Oklahoma. I've got two bachelors, one from Central State in industrial safety, the other from Langston University in biology. I'm currently a CSP as well as a CHMM. I'm really, really excited about this opportunity to speak with everyone and gain some knowledge and share some knowledge as well. Thank you, Corey.
Great, thank you. It's a small world. I noticed you mentioned Guam. I actually lived on Guam for about 2 years when I was in the Air Force. That's cool. That's really cool. All right. Lori, how about yourself?
Yes, hi, I'm Lori Schroth, and I am the past administrator of the Public Sector Practice Specialty. Right now, I'm a senior safety and environmental professional at Concurrent Technologies Corporation in Johnstown, Pennsylvania. And basically, I'm a defense contractor. So I support the Department of Defense and its services and agencies in implementing safety management systems. I've worked for CTC for the last 12 years. And before this, I worked at another government another government contractor called Kuchera Defense Systems, and they manufactured circuit boards. That experience was unique because I was the first safety person that they ever hired. So I got thrown into an OSHA inspection that had a lot of findings and citations and everything that I had to handle fresh out of college. So I had the opportunity to build their safety and environmental program up from nothing. I am a CSP and a certified healthcare safety professional, along with a CIT as well. And my educational background consists of my undergraduate degrees being in safety sciences and natural sciences. And I have advanced degrees in occupational safety management and a doctorate in business administration. But that's it, Corey. Thank you.
That's great. Thank you. All right. And, and we got Brandon, who is also one of the the most recent administrator for the public sector practice specialty. You also may remember him from one of our earliest podcast episodes. Brandon, how about yourself?
Thanks, Corey, and glad to be back on. I don't have much to expand on from what Lori said. Lori and I actually are coworkers and work together, and that's how I got roped into my volunteerism with the ASSP is Lori actually inviting me onto the committee. But again, my name is Brandon Hody. I also work for Concurrent Technologies Corporation in Johnstown, Pennsylvania. I am a senior safety and occupational health professional. As Lori said, we do safety management system implementation as defense contractors. I also do have some industrial hygiene experience with CTC, both in private industry, but also with the Department of Defense as well. Doing very survey sampling, different things that they've needed from a consulting aspect. In addition to that, I am a CSP as well and a certified healthcare safety professional. Both my bachelor's and my master's degree are in safety science from Indiana University of Pennsylvania. It's funny how you get so many different people with different backgrounds together, and we got a lot of IUP on this team here, and that's what I like to hear. But I think that's really about it.
Great, great. Well, thank you. And as always, we appreciate everybody being here and spending some of your hard-earned time with us today. So, like I said, we're going to be talking about best practices and, how that applies across the different practice specialties and different industries, especially within our world over in healthcare safety. We tend to see pretty much any hazard that exists, and we tend to work with most other practice specialties in some capacity, whether it's public sector with public health operations, or whether it's industrial hygiene, and different monitoring and different operations in the hospitals and whatnot, or whether it's environmental management with RCRA and CERCLA and tier two reporting and all that good stuff. So we definitely come across the board with almost everybody. So we're glad to have you. So with that, the first question we always start with is the different types of hazards that you see the most. So I know within public sector, of course, it covers literally everything in the city. So you've got public works, you've got public health, you've got the police, you got the fire, you've got the library system, everything. So if y'all want to give us just kind of a breakdown of some of the hazards that you deal with the most, we'd appreciate it.
So I'll go ahead and start, Corey. So in the city of Houston, we have approximately 22,000 employees, not including contractors or temps. That's just a solid number of employees, but it does include our classified employees, our police men and firefighters. I would say the most frequent and costly incident that we experience at the city of Houston by far are vehicle accidents. Slip, trips, and falls are right behind it, but vehicle accidents across the board is the problem that we experience. Every department in the city of Houston, and we have 26 of them, have a higher rate than I would agree upon vehicle accidents. So that's the hazard that we face at the city of Houston. I would be curious to hear Denise, because she's also the municipality, but also from Lori and Brandon also, because they're different areas of public sector.
Yeah, and I'll jump in, Stephen, because I'd like to tie me and Lori's experience to the public sector, because when we first joined the public sector, the military was a part of that. It was a branch under it. And so we thought that fit very well because of our experience with the military and what we did. But of course, that's transitioned over the couple years as that branch grew into its own very own practice specialty. Of course, we have still a lot within the public sector that applies to what we do. Military installations themselves are essentially cities, right? And so, you know, they're taking care of all the typical things that you would do. They have fire departments, they have police forces, you know, they have public works and utilities and things that they're dealing with. So they have a lot of the same stuff, but that's not just, you know, everything that encompasses what we do. And so we see a range of things, and to tie it to kind of how, you know, we talked about their variety of practice specialties and these podcasts going on with them to experience some of the different things they do. The Department of Defense is one of those places that separates those different things, almost like the practice specialties are. You know, safety professionals have a lane of safety, and that's separate from the lane of industrial hygiene, that's separate from the lane of environmental. And, you know, they have transportation review boards like on-base traffic review boards and things like that, that even separately, you know, it might involve safety, but separately handle transportation and traffic incidents and things like that. So they really break all these things down into separate positions and different things. And then there's Lori and I on the side of, we're kind of expected to do it all as consultants. So, you know, that's the thing, is we get to experience a variety of things from, you know, vehicle accidents and things that they may have on bases, but realistically down at the level of safety and industrial hygiene, things that we look at, from fall hazards, which is, of course, is a big one, to lockout, tagout, and energy control, and just a whole gamut of things. And we tend to look at those from, you know, the perspective of our work in safety management systems as a high level policy program system point of view, and how do all those systems work to become effective.
Cool. Awesome. Yeah, it's definitely interesting. You know, even within a city or a military base, you know, you may have people that somebody from the outside would assume work together, you know, such as a safety pro or an industrial hygienist, but they may be in two completely separate areas. You know, like I know in the city, we have safety pros over in the, you know, the risk management safety team, and then we have industrial hygienists that are overworking in the environmental health division of the health department, you know. So it's interesting how that works. And the other thing that's interesting, like you were saying, is within a military base, a lot of people assume that, you know, of course the military is hazardous, but they assume that because of they think about war. But the reality in the military is that you have a higher chance of getting hurt just doing day-to-day work, just like you would in any other workplace that you know is regulated by OSHA, as you would from actually going into combat. So it's interesting how that works out, and the safety is definitely paramount there. So definitely great perspectives. We appreciate that. Denise, how about yourself? What are your thoughts?
Primarily, just like with Stephen, we have a lot of collisions. Basically, if you think of it this way, the city and all of the vehicles and everything else have these big targets on them called the SEAL. And of course, that kind of prompts a lot of injuries and, I mean, collisions that we do have. Not only that, we drive a lot of heavy equipment and things like that that are not easily stopped when it comes to vehicle accidents. The other thing that we see a lot, and thank goodness we haven't seen any catastrophic injuries associated with it, is that we do have utilities. So we have Austin Energy, which is our electrical utility, as well as Austin Water, which is our water utilities. So there again, there's a high propensity for any kind of hazards and unique hazards that are involved with the cities.
Great, great. Yeah, that's great perspectives. And I certainly agree, you know, in my experience, my personal, you know, anecdotal experience, I too have been on the receiving end of aggressive drivers that they seem to target the city seal on the vehicle. So whenever I drive a city vehicle, my defensive driving practices are operating at about 1,000%, because if somebody hits me, I don't want there to be any chance that, you know, I contributed to that. So it's interesting how that works, for sure. And it's even more interesting that experience is the same up in Austin as it is in Houston. All right. Well, yeah, so we talked about hazards. So, of course, you know, from the discussion, there is definitely a wide array and a lot going on there with different functional areas and different hazards. So with that, you know, I know we kind of already touched on this a little bit, talking about things like safety management systems and different hazard controls and different training, like defensive driving and fleet management and things of that nature. But what are some of the best practices that you've seen, you know, just throughout your career and with these different work areas?
All right. So, Corey, this is Steven. I'll lead on this one. So, in the city of Houston, and I'm sure with other municipalities as well as the environments that both Brandon and Lori work in, we've had issues from a safety leadership perspective. It is not that we have poor leadership, it's the structure of which the leadership is laid out. So when I came on board with the city, and as well as you, Corey, we have a central safety office, but that office allowed the 25 or 26 departments to pretty much run their own safety programs. And what we saw by looking at the data, that simply doesn't work. So when I came in as the safety operations manager, or division manager, roughly 6 years ago, my director at the time asked, you know, what can we do to reduce the injuries and the costs associated with those injuries, as well as property damage? And I identified that that's pretty much the problem, is you have 26 departments doing 26 different things when it comes to safety. So my solution was to implement a safety management system, preferably ANSI Z10, which we are in the process of doing now, of the 26 departments. I would say we're pretty much halfway through the implementation process. And if you know anything about ANSI Z10, it's continuous improvement. So half of those departments, we're monitoring them for improvement right now, whether it's improvements within each department, but as well as improvements that we can make to the system. And the other 13 or 14 departments, they're kind of on standby, getting prepped, ready to go. So what I found, just in the short period of time that we began to implement ANSI Z10, and we actually just got up a phone call, Corey and I and others from our staff, about the progress of ANSI Z10, we're seeing improvements because now safety is consolidated. There's one safety program, there's one safety plan, there's one way to investigate an accident or incident or whatever the term is in your organization, instead of giving options to departments on how to investigate certain things and what the policy should say. That's never a good recipe. So for me, Corey, I say it's safety leadership, and you can even tie in hazard control, but I believe having a safety management system, some form of consolidated leadership, is the key to success, the best practice that all organizations should follow, versus allowing different groups to do different things because they do different things. That's, in my opinion and in my experience, that's not really the recipe for success.
Cool, good perspectives. Yeah, the leadership is definitely a major factor, not only for hazard control, but for culture change and continual improvement, definitely. Denise, how about yourself? What are your thoughts?
I completely agree with this, Stephen. We do not have a leadership program. We have not actually adopted Z10 yet, but we are working on getting that. Austin is kind of in a baby step thing. We are completely decentralized. Every department kind of does their own thing. The safety departments, the departments have their own individual safety groups. Although we do have the corporate safety and we have that safety umbrella within it, which also includes making a safety manual that the departments have to follow. But we also, because the uniqueness of the department's hazards that are not the same. Obviously, someone in real estate doesn't have the same hazards as someone in public works. And so we allow the departments to create their own SOPs within or underneath that global safety umbrella. But we are decentralized, so it's not as easy to get everybody on board to act in concert like it is in Houston. I know that we had some of the same problems as Houston. Houston has seemed to step up and take up those things. We just haven't gotten there yet.
Cool. Yeah, great perspectives. It's always interesting to hear the different experiences from the different locations, whether it's a city or an organization, and to see the different trends on what works and where the challenges are, so we can all continue learning from each other. That's always great. So with that being said, you know, of course, municipalities are a little interesting because there's the expectation that we meet or exceed minimal regulations and national consensus standards, but of course there's a difference in the actual oversight and reporting with OSHA and whatnot. Not so much with EPA, but with OSHA is a little difference there. Within that, you know, we have all these different OSHA regulations, these Code of Federal Regulations with 1910, 1926, and then of course we have the RCRA and the CERCLA and the local Emergency Planning Community Right to Know Act and all these different regulations and then national consensus standards and the CDC and NIOSH. So there's this whole myriad of these different regulations and standards. In y'all's opinion over the years, do you feel like those are effective or do you feel like there's still needs that are coming around with those different regulations?
No, Brandon, I'll jump. Go ahead.
No problem, Stephen. I always have the same perspective that I always carry on when we talk about the regulations that are currently in place. There are some that are very good, but for the most part, a lot of them are exactly what we call them, which are minimums. And it's the actual bare minimum in order to realistically, from OSHA's perspective, not put too much strain, you know, in the broad spectrum of workplaces, you know, ranging down to small businesses and such. And so, you know, they have limitation on how far can we push it before, you know, we bankrupt somebody or this is unfeasible or this doesn't apply to everybody. And so, you know, and I think a lot of people know there's a lot of OSHA standards that are also very, very outdated. And, you know, you always hear news about whether or not they're updating it or working on it. And something sometimes just never happens. So I feel like there's a lot that can still be done in terms of trying to be more than just meeting the minimum, especially when it comes to OSHA standards, and to do a little more when it comes to consensus standards. And there's plenty of consensus standards out there. I know Lori and I work on a couple committees for some ANSI and ISEA and some different standards out there. But those are all usually more effective. They all usually are more encompassing. They all usually are more up to date. And so there might be even just a line item that it's just so much more up to date than what OSHA has in there that it makes sense to do and to be doing. And it really does come down to, you know, what's the size of your business and how much resources do you have? And can you push that envelope a little further? That's why I like the work that we do with safety management systems, because that's what it focuses a lot on, is you already have to meet compliance, right? And so we start to look at our systems and our processes in terms of what do we currently do and how can we get better? And maybe it's just one thing, or maybe it's a couple things, or maybe it's just that one step forward above the minimum that might do some sort of improvement for the betterment of safety and health to our workers. And that's kind of my perspective from there on that.
So, and I want to add this. So I'll stick to OSHA. So municipalities are kind of different, where there is no OSHA enforcement. So I would love to say that it is effective in the city of Houston, but we don't know because it's not enforced. In fact, we've had situations where employees also know this and refuse to be safe because in their mind, they take the terminology out of context. Oh, OSHA can't do nothing. Oh, we're not an OSHA state, and so we don't have to be safe. I've actually heard that not only from employees, but management in the past. Brandon is right. OSHA is the bare minimum. But I believe in our case, Brandon, from a municipal standpoint, I would prefer to have that bare minimum than nothing at all. And that's kind of one of the challenges of a city, especially if you're not in a OSHA state, is you don't have that backing of OSHA to enforce safety regulations. So it's pretty much up to your municipality, your safety department or group, risk management group, and being creative. One of the reasons we bought into the ANSI Z10 was to help us out with that lack of enforcement from OSHA. So yeah, good points on that. I am for having OSHA. Honestly, I know it's more work from a safety professional standpoint. But I think if we personally had OSHA enforcement in the city of Houston, our numbers would be 4 to 5 times lower. And I did not misspeak that, 4 to 5 times lower than they are now.
One of the things that I can say as far as the city of Austin is we have gotten buy-in from our city manager that allows us to use OSHA as minimum standards. And I do mean minimum because a lot of the things that, as Brandon indicated, you know, OSHA's regulations haven't necessarily been updated or are necessarily the best practice management, but at least it's something and it's a starting point. And even when we communicate that information to our individual departments, our individual departments understand that OSHA is your minimum standard. And you cannot, it's not acceptable to say, well, OSHA doesn't apply to us. And I've had the same issues as Stephen, as well as managers coming up to me and going, well, OSHA can't. We don't have to abide by OSHA standards. And that's not necessarily true. OSHA can't fine you, but you still have to apply or at least meet those minimum standards.
It goes back to the general duty clause.
One of the things I like to tell my managers when they do kind of throw that out at me is that if you had a contractor working right next to your people and you don't have any PPE or whatever because OSHA doesn't require it, because you don't require it because you don't have to follow OSHA, and that person standing next to them that happens to be a vendor has all of his PPE gear on and everything else. Something catastrophic happens and both workers are hurt. I don't know how you're going to defend that in a lawsuit, saying that it's okay just because OSHA doesn't require me to have that. It still goes back to best management practices and your moral and ethical duties of what you should be doing.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's interesting. You know, I actually wrote an article, I guess it was about 2 years ago now, It was called How to Lose a Case, and it is very similar to the perspectives that y'all have there, where, you know, regardless of what's written into the regulation or who the regulation applies to specifically and what the different exemptions are, any lawyer that, you know, has been doing this for a minute, you know, they can very easily look at, okay, here's the hazard, here's the expected best practices, you know, and that's not even necessarily what's in the Code of Federal Regulations. That can be found just with a Google search. And then, of course, you've got, you know, were the best practices implemented? Were the expectations communicated? Were there any leading indicators to validate, you know, effective use of the hazard controls? And then were there incident analysis and follow-ups done to figure out continual improvement? So if those things aren't there, it's going to be difficult to get out of a litigation unscathed. And aside from the, you know, legal talk and whatnot, this is something we were actually just talking about with Rachel at the ergonomics practice specialty, is, you know, just the human empathy and sympathy and compassion there, is that it's almost impossible to speak to employees who have just had a coworker injured or worse and talk to them knowing that effective hazard control is not in place and they're at risk, especially them knowing the possible outcomes. So, you know, there's, to y'all's point, there's a million reasons why safety is just critical. You know, it's an operational value at all times, regardless of what's in the standards, which of course the standards provide those, you know, minimal safe working conditions. So it's an interesting thing. I'm glad to see there's continual improvement around it, and I'm glad to hear the different perspectives. Did I interrupt anybody? I thought I heard something coming up.
I don't believe so, Cora.
Okay, cool. All right. Well, yeah, so we're talking about the, you know, we got the regulations and the national consensus standards. And then of course above that we have the, you know, the continual improvement quest for safe working conditions and safe work practices and situational awareness. So that extends to everything from everyday operations all the way to, you know, natural disasters and contingency operations and everything in between. But aside from all that, with safety, as you all know, we deal with intersections of personal wellness and fatigue and exhaustion and stress and burnout, you know, all these different things, especially in the last 22 months, we've been dealing with a global pandemic. What are y'all's thoughts about that as far as different best practices and different ways to address those type of human factors, if you will?
Okay, I'll chime in. My answer is going to be a little more indirect, Corey. Curious to hear what the rest of the group has to say. So one of the things that I believe is an issue, other safety issue, is wellness in the workplace and how it relates to employee health and safety. My dissertation research actually revolves around that. I'm of the stern belief that a healthy employee is a safe employee. And when I say healthy, it's just not BMI, high blood pressure, cholesterol, but also mental health. Total worker health, I'm a big believer in that also. And it's tied into my research. What I found in my research, without going into detail, is organizations and inside and outside of the public sector, but organizations in general that have an effective, and that's the key word, effective wellness program, tend to see lower injury rates and lower costs associated with those injuries. I know total worker health is in its infancy for the most part, but it's taking off. If I'm not mistaken, there's gonna be an ANSI system coming out of it real soon. So I think that's my thing, is in the future, we should see more employers integrating rather workplace wellness, their wellness programs with their safety programs. And I think that's those organizations that's already doing it are reaping the benefits, and those that do it in the future will. And I think that's the future of occupational health and safety. You're going to have to plug in that word wellness somewhere, especially in light of the pandemic that we're in right now, that's really challenging us, our mental wellness. I wouldn't be surprised down the road, it won't be just EHS, it'll be EHWS.
That's a great perspective. The wellness is certainly critical. You know, that's part of the conversations we've been having earlier is, you know, without, you know, things like accounting for personal condition and fatigue management and preventing overexhaustion and burnout, all of those things are factors, you know, in the system. So if those are inputs into the system, it's going to affect operations and it's going to affect safety, possibly environmental management, all different kinds of things there. So it's very interesting, and I agree. I'm glad that that's being looked at, especially at the national level. And within the last year, you know, there's been a lot of insight where people are realizing that, you know, for many years they've always said EHS, you know, or SHE as a instinctual, you know, oh, what do? I do EHS. And most people never thought about that. Typically, people do about 80% safety and about 15% environmental and maybe about 5% health. Typically, the health gets, you know, outsourced to the occupational health clinic or whatnot. But with the wellness and all that associated with it, the H, you know, the health is really coming up. And that's gotten kind of forced with the pandemic. So that's interesting to see how that's worked. Anybody else have any other thoughts on that?
Yeah, Corey, I'll chime in. This is Brandon. I always like to tie the wellness piece to culture. And it's a lot to do with, you know, either societal norms or, you know, the culture that we impose on a workforce. And I'm going to tie that back to our experience that Lori and I have in the military, which is, you know, you have these conflicting things where in the military, you really want to focus on, you know, being strong and pushing through and perseverance and toughness and things that you want soldiers to be able to translate into combat, right? You know, when it comes to saving your life, somebody else's life, completing the mission, to be able to persevere through the things that maybe push you past your limits. And when you have to create a culture like that for something as unique as the military, unfortunately, that culture doesn't just apply to combat, right? They start to apply that culture to regular work in the workplace or the things they do at home, or, you know, the culture becomes a part of you and it absorbs you in it a little bit. And so I heard, you know, I was hearing stories as I go to some of the military organizations that we support, you know, things like ceremonies, for example, where you'll have soldiers standing out, you know, in uniform in the middle of the heat, standing still, you know, not moving for a part of a ceremony, right? And there used to be this culture that you do whatever you can to stand there and persevere through that heat. And, you know, even if that's a sacrifice of your own health and your own wellness, and you'd run into situations where you have a soldier just straight up collapse on, you know, in the field in the ceremony, right? And that probably looks worse than it would have to swap that person out and actually put somebody in there that can carry on the rest of the duty. And so that's a cultural example that one site had shared with me where they had to learn a whole new process in terms of how can we get people to indicate that they're nearing that point of exhaustion where, you know, we can pull them out of line, put somebody else in line and do this transition in a way that doesn't affect the ceremony, but also doesn't provide the oohs and ahs of a soldier collapsing right there in the field. And then how does that impact, you know, the culture you're trying to create of toughness, right? Or of perseverance, when you're telling me it's okay to not persevere, and how do you balance that? And so, and that's just an example of the military, but there's societal norms that we push across people. And, you know, people still talk about those, right? If you have a whole machine shop, you know, the majority of places you go with a machine shop is going to be a bunch of men, sometimes some older men, especially in today's workforce. And, you know, probably brought up in the culture of being manly and being tough and doing things like lifting something too heavy, for example, and blowing your back out, right, herniating a disc, because you wanted to be tough about it rather than ask for help. And so some of those things, I think, have a real large impact on wellness.
And Corey, I'll play off of what Stephen and Brandon said. I'm a remote worker, so I have a home office, and I've worked at home way longer than the pandemic. And I want to point out that from a wellness perspective, on a personal level, that physical and mental wellness is very important, not only in your day-to-day job, but at home as well, too. Some of the things that I've done personally to address those physical and mental wellness challenges that remote workers experience are getting a Fitbit, and I track my steps every day to make sure that I get out there and I exercise. It does brighten your mind to help you work more productively too. For mental wellness, I know that I call my coworkers all the time and talk, just because I don't have those face-to-face interactions with them all the time. And another thing that I do is just find time to relax too. At the end of the workday, I set a hard end time to try to maintain a schedule. And I try to identify a bedtime too, just to promote that wellness, because I found myself at the beginning of the pandemic staying up until like 4 or 5 a.m. and there was no reason for it. So those are some of the personal wellness issues that I've experienced, kind of related to work, but while I'm at home. And I know that the wellness programs that organizations implement can really help facilitate and drive those personal and mental challenges, especially whenever they give you time to take a walk at lunchtime, or to go and have your fitness time, or have those counseling sessions with professionals on hand.
Yeah, that's great input, definitely. And I can attest to that myself, is that, you know, if I don't keep myself in check, I'll do the same thing. You know, I'll be up until the middle of the night just because I got into something that I wanted to work on and I didn't know where to stop. And you know, I've had times where my supervisor has had to, you know, give me the direct order not to work on, you know, Saturday. That's just because I tend to do that a lot. So it's interesting. I like to hear y'all's perspectives on that. So that kind of goes into the next thing here is, so we talked about, you know, the hazards, and we talked about the best practices. We talked about the regulations. And then of course there's the wellness and the mental health and everything that kind of exists around all of those things that certainly influences it. So knowing all of that, if you had a magic wand, you know, if there's something that you could shake your magic wand and you could change something about safety or about regulations or about wellness and mental health or culture, any of these things, what's the thing that you would change? Stephen, we can start with you. What do you think?
So the one thing that irritates me is when the whole political thing of safety, I know you all have heard that statement of, if a Democratic president is in office, safety is going to improve. If a Republican president is in office, they don't focus on safety as much. And the research suggests that is true. And if I had a magic wand, I would wave my wand to take the focus of the power out of politics and more in employee engagement.
Cool. And I'll jump in, because Stephen stole exactly what I was going to say. And, you know, political divide is obviously a much larger thing today. Don't even want to get into all that. But that's exactly what you hear. And a lot of it, people believe it's, you know, the range of the market, right? And Republicans want more market, you know, more market freedom and things like that. And where does freedom come from? Lifting regulations, right? And then, of course, Democrats want to impose things and impose a little bit more laws, and they're more about big government. And so more regulation from OSHA makes sense. And so you really wish there wasn't a divide there and you could just wave the wand over it and just everybody just kind of thought safety was important. And let's find that balance in there of, you know, where we push that boundary to before we say it does too much. My wand would definitely be anything related to culture. Culture is the biggest and toughest thing for a lot of people to tackle. And so if you could wave it over everybody and get everybody to just kind of open their eyes to safety and just think it's important, even if you don't agree on things, just have the same understanding that this is important and we need to discuss this issue and come to a solution. I think that would help solve a lot of challenges.
Yeah, and going off of what Brandon said with the culture, I totally agree with your answer, Brandon. But if I had a magic wand, I would want everybody to be able to embrace change. As a safety professional, I can say that a lot of my struggles and frustrations lead to, you know, people not wanting to make a change. And in our experience, you know, we help these work sites implement safety management systems, which is above and beyond compliance with regulations. So we want them to shoot for the moon. But we have people that are just hesitant because they don't have the perspective that you have. They just don't want to change. They've been doing it like that for 50 years. So definitely a culture change, as Brandon said. And I would love for everybody to just embrace change, you know, make the workplace better as you try to improve it.
Yeah, why shoot for the moon? The atmosphere on Earth is great down here.
I'm curious to hear what Denise has to say because we've had this discussion before.
Yeah, my problem is, again, same with everyone else, it's the policies and the politics involved in safety in the U.S. The lobbyists have a lot of power, and they push back on some of the regulations that we definitely need. Case in point there with the silica regulations and stuff like that, they pushed and pushed and pushed back on it. But I do also agree with Lori. You know, one of the problems that I had when I first went into safety is when you inherit an older group, a group that's used to doing things their own way. One of the things that I used to do is I had a book, and I can't remember who the author was, but the book is called Who Moved My Cheese? And I would make every single one of my employees read that book because I could find each one of those little mouse in that book right in my own office. And so it's one of those things where people just have to learn how to adapt to change. And that it's a very, very important message as far as making sure that we adapt to change, adapt to culture, and it'll make safety a lot easier to handle.
Definitely. Had great perspectives. And there's certainly a lot of moving parts with the culture, definitely the politics and the regulations. So it'll be interesting to see how everything continues to evolve. But I'm always encouraged, you know, whenever we talk to leaders, you know, within ASSP or National City Council or AOHP, because I feel like everybody's on the right, on the same page. You know, everybody is looking for ways to increase, you know, safe conditions and safe work practices and the ability to continue things safely, both at work and at home. So I think that's great. Always glad to hear that. So the last thing here, I know everybody's very busy, so I don't want to take up your whole day, but I always like to open it up if there's anything that y'all want to talk about, anything going on with the public sector practice specialty, ASSP, any other updates, news, anything that you'd like to plug, open floor, feel free.
So instead of plugging things that's coming down the pipe line, because we do have a lot of things coming up the pipe, I want to take this time to give props to the past leadership of the practice specialty Starting with Leo, Leo wasn't able to make it today, but he intended on being here, but moving on to Laurie and Brandon. So practice specialty, and I'm not sure of the actual age of the public sector practice specialty. Laurie, I have to help me with that, but Leo started it from scratch. And Laurie took this group to another level to being one of the top practice specialties in ASSP. In my opinion, it is the top. You have to be part of it to understand the things that we accomplish, and it's a find-all machine. Also, just have to give Brandon Hody props also. During the pandemic, we actually grew, not in numbers, but grew as a practice specialty. He kept us afloat and then some. So he exceeded not only my expectations, and my expectations are high of Brandon, but I believe he exceeded his own expectations. He and his wife had twins. Not getting too much personal, but I believe he moved into a new home. A lot of things were going on behind the scenes personally, and he was able to lead us without any error. So sky is the limit. You've heard Denise speak. Denise is phenomenal. I know her personally in working with the city of Austin. So man, leadership is awesome. But I just wanted to give Laurie and Brandon and Leo props for getting us to this point, and give Denise some future props, because I know she's going to take us to another level that we've never seen. So that's just my two cents. Just, I appreciate everything that you guys have done for this group, for the practice specialty as a whole.
Thanks, I appreciate it, Stephen. I know we're set up for success, and I'm sure that you're gonna do even more to make us. It's funny, when you get to the top, like we believe we are, right? I think we're the best practice specialty as well. You start to look up and go, well, where do we go from here? And I'm sure you'll have us on the right path to keep exceeding and keep doing better and keep improving. Safety management system mindset, right? Continuous improvement cycle.
You know, one of the things that we're thinking about doing, and it may not be in my administration, it may be in Denise's, but we're looking at other practice specialties and what they're doing right. Like Corey and his podcast, Environmental has a phenomenal newsletter. Those are some of the things that I would like to see in the future we integrate into our practice specialty, as well as membership. Of course, this is all about membership, growing our membership. We have some plans ahead to grow our membership. We have to be very strategic with it, and we will, but we have a lot of untapped membership out there that we need to try to get on board. We lost a lot from the military practice specialty becoming its own, as well as COVID. Employers just didn't pay for their safety professionals to continue being a part of ASSP. So we got a lot of ground to make up, but with the team that we have, you know, like I said, it's a well-oiled machine. Denise, a lot of people don't know this, but Denise saw a similar need in the state of Texas, where safety professionals didn't have a voice in public sector. Down here, it's all about workers' comp. And I've been talking about it for years, and she did it. She created a whole safety municipal group. I'm not sure how many members we have. I would guess to say about 80, but we meet every quarter to talk about all things safety in the public sector. It was told to me that would be impossible to do, and she did it. So that's the type of leadership that we have on this call today, is to get us membership wise back to where we were and then some, but also take us to another level of what we've never seen, whether it's professional newsletters, podcasts such as this, collaboration with other groups that we haven't collaborated in the past for one reason or another. My job is we're already on a map. I just want to make sure people understand that we are the best practice specialty. I'm very arrogant, and yeah.
Same. Sorry, Corey, but we're not sorry, because this is the Healthcare's podcast, public sector takeover.
Yeah. Corey knew that when he put us on the call. We was going to, yeah.
good. We over in healthcare, you know, we're very familiar with, we're used to being low in numbers, you know, so we have kind of an interesting situation. We get a lot of people that they find their way into healthcare, and so we tend to get a lot of assimilation, you know, best practices and different experiences, and then we're able to apply that. And it's a great thing because healthcare has an interesting history. You know, safety is split up among, you've got your employee safety, which is the newest of the bunch. You know, before us, we had infection prevention and control, and you had patient safety. And so just building out and developing what we do, you know, in terms of safety and being able to integrate that with what's already in the healthcare culture, it's important. And so it takes a lot of different perspectives. So we're always happy to collaborate and hear what's going on. And I'm actually, you know, I'm in the best job I ever had because I get to work in healthcare and public sector at the same time, you know, so it's kind of interesting. You know, there's an old saying, they say, I didn't know my expectations until they weren't met. But in my case, I didn't know my expectations until they were met. It's like, I didn't know this job was even a thing. And somehow I found my way here. So this is the best place I've ever been. But
Corey, let me ask you a question. I know we have to get off for another call, but let me ask you this question real quick. Being that you are a integral part of the public sector practice specialty also, and you contribute a lot to our group, give us some feedback from your perspective of public sector, what we are currently achieving, and what do you see us in the next 2 to 4 years?
Well, I think just, you know, continual improvement is the operative word. You know, y'all have done fantastic work, you know, just in, I know that y'all work on a lot of publications. That's always great because that's, you know, that's forever. Once the written word never goes away, you know, and those are professional credits. You know, you've got your webinars, you've got your leadership team, you know, you're very consistent. So it's just a matter of continuing those things and then, you know, building out however the advisory board chooses to, you know, whatever communication methods and educational methods and whatever forums and resources you choose to do, and you've got the people, you got the expertise. So it's great. It's just a matter of continuing and staying relevant, you know, staying current. So I think it's great.
We appreciate it. It's always good to get another perspective than administrators and past administrators. So I appreciate it.
Oh, certainly. Well, yeah, we appreciate y'all being here. Real quick, Denise, I didn't want to leave you out there. Is there anything you want to add?
No, I think we're all good.
The pressure is on Denise in the next 2 years.
Yeah, you're in the it's kind of like you're in that little space where you're waiting to get on like the Texas Cyclone and Astroworld, and you know, watch the people in front of you go around the track, and then you're waiting to get on the ride. It's
exactly.
But I'm already in transition phase, so
it's all good. Yeah, we're in the same type of situation as environmental, where our assistant administrator was elected out of cycle. So I had advised her. I said, buyer beware. You know, you've got a year, and then it's on. You know, I said, you know, you have 2 years. You know, it all works out. We got great people all around. But yeah, I know everybody's busy. I know for some of y'all it's 5 o'clock. So we'll go ahead and tie it up there. But if there's definitely for everybody listening, check out what's going on. The public sector practice specialty's got a lot of great stuff. Us at the healthcare practice specialty, we got webinars coming up in October and November. Both are co-sponsored by the public sector. We're going to be talking about the COVID-19 OSHA emergency temporary standard. We're going to be talking about burnout prevention and fatigue management. And then the podcast. We're up to 24 episodes. We're at anchor.fm/ASSP-HCPS-HealthBeat. So definitely check that out. We got a lot of great stuff on there. Otherwise, if you have any questions, comments, concerns, complaints, or requests, check us out on the communities page and LinkedIn and Twitter, which is at ASSP-HCPS. Otherwise, we wish everybody a fantastic day, and we'll talk to you real soon.
Thank you, Corey.